This is the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Denise Morse, your host this morning. I'm in studio here with The Left and the Law, Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker. They've got a little post-mortem on the election for us, Jan and Mike.
Well, there's been tremendous anxiety for some time about Republican Supreme Court appointments, and the right has been quite fixated on the goal of reversing Roe v. Wade, a daunting problem in and of itself. But there's another dark figure entering the stage here of Trump's pageantry of power, and that is his appointment of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. So let's start with this role. What does the, as an attorney who navigated in this world for quite a while of the law, what does the Attorney General do as the chief lawyer of the land?
A lot. The Attorney General advises the president on who to appoint at the, not only the Supreme Court level, but at all lower levels of courts. He represents the United States, and any legal matter determines who to prosecute with a death penalty. But primarily, his one of the areas where he has the most power is the area of immigration law. Because in the area of criminal justice, there is a separation of powers. There are judges appointed that any executive member has to deal with. But in the area of immigration law, he can appoint judges he likes and get rid of judges he doesn't like. He can reverse decisions made by immigration law judges.
So at various levels of the bureaucracy, he can steamroll and push things through more effectively than with the courts and the criminal justice system, where there's more sites and positions to push back from.
Yeah, for example, in 1994, your sexual gender was allowed to give you asylum if it was being persecuted in the country you came from. That was a decision made by the Attorney General. That can be reversed by the Attorney General. And Jeff Sessions is keenly interested in immigration.
He has a longer attention span than President-elect Trump, which is not necessarily a good thing, right? I mean, in and of itself, he's been interested in this for quite some time, and in fact had submitted a Senate Bill 1640 in June of 2015 that would specifically target sanctuary cities and punish them around immigration issues. So what is his strategy for dealing with immigration and fulfilling Trump's trumpeted proposals around deporting? I think he does probably think of them as imports and exports, but deporting undocumented workers.
Well, he's already written a handbook on how the U.S. should deal with immigration. It's all about curbing it. And, of course, his notions are premised on the idea that we're legally importing millions of low-wage workers while we're sustaining millions of people on welfare. That's his basic ideological slant. So he has made the most repressive laws of almost any state in Alabama, which has caused Alabama farmers and growers and some capitalists to complain down there. But he will do, he's close to Trump. He was early on the wagon. In February, he supported him. He's like a conciliary. He'll be like John Mitchell was to Richard Nixon. He'll have a lot of power. And this will be, I think, an early flashpoint with the Trump regime, because even as he works hard to get rid of people he calls criminal aliens, there are not only sanctuary cities, but there are sanctuary campuses, and particularly in the West Coast, in San Jose State, and the chancellor of the California University System, where there are like 400,000 students, has said that they will not cooperate with the federal government in enforcing immigration laws. So there is a serious resistance.
But, the immigrant rights movement and the sanctuary movement has been also pounded rather heavily by the Obama administration. Obama did deport something like 2.4 million people. The Secure Communities Act of a decade or so ago really pushed for local law enforcement to cooperate with ICE around immigration policies, and many police departments, including the U.S., I mean, including here in Portland, have developed policies to not report, for example, a person who is picked up and booked in a jail, reporting them to immigration. So I think it's also important not to set this regime as a complete departure from what has been happening in recent decades.
It's going to be cleaner, Jen. I mean, Obama was an engaging guy, but he was a neoliberal to his core. And so that made it confusing to oppose him or any of his policies because it might blunt another policy that you like. But none of that ambiguity is present here. It will be Trump attempting to categorize everyone from another country as a criminal alien. And it will be sanctuary cities and students who are seeing them as fellow students, as people studying medieval history next to them in class. It will be people working in cities. And there is a history of a sanctuary cities and sanctuaries from the early 80s, when the wars that we were supporting in Central America led to refugees who at first found a safe space in churches, but then that expanded to cities. So,
which can include not participating with ICE, but also providing access to services and other forms of support to undocumented workers.
That's right. It's a fuzzy notion, the sanctuary. It can be, at minimum, not cooperating with ICE or the Federal Enforcement Bureau, and maximum it can be consciously providing city services to them as would any other resident, treating them as residents, equal residents.
And I think now one effect under the Obama administration was this idea that oppressed groups, people of color, poor people, homeless people, were the vulnerable ones who needed sanctuary. And I think now there is some sense that there aren't that many places of sanctuary from this regime that has very much bared its teeth. And so there may be a common ground around different levels of vulnerability. Some groups are far more vulnerable and apt to be targeted, but a sense of, as social classes that do not own the apparatus of power are not the owning classes, some potential forms of solidarity that go beyond some of the discourse of sanctuary in the past that is only taking in those that are vulnerable. Many of us are vulnerable now.
Well, it's also a regional difference. You know, the West Coast massively voted against Trump. Much of these early and articulate expressions of resistance come from people in power in the West Coast. The West Coast not only buried Trump in the elections, but they supply tens of billions of dollars in extra taxes, that more than they get back in federal funds. So the West is not without power, and it'll be very interesting to see how regional opposition, along with class opposition and social opposition, fares.
One worry around the sanctuary movement is the potential for mobilizing the urban-rural divide in ways that are really destructive, and it's a worrisome aspect to even some of the left rhetoric or progressive rhetoric that casts rural people as inherently backward, that cities are where it's at. And Sessions is very good at mobilizing that, these West Coast cities, the Sodom and Gomorrahs on the hill, you know, that I think it's also important to note how many rural areas have provided sanctuary spaces, and small towns are on the map of, so it's not just the big city on the hill or on the West Coast, which, and our economies may not depend on the base as much as those places that have been so devastated economically in this country.
But we need to make those alliances where they can be made. You know, there's a natural and timeless almost opposition between rural areas and the cities.
Partly it's very old.
I know. The cities set the prices for the goods produced, you know, the trees, the food. So there's a natural opposition, but it will always be there to some degree. But to the extent that it can be blunted around an area where there are many common interests, for example, where rural economies are supported, meat packing areas by immigrants. So it's not necessarily total opposition all the time, particularly on this issue.
Yeah, and so what, just in our last few minutes, what about on the criminal justice front, where you've been very active? Where do you see the sites of resistance there? You're saying that it cannot just appoint, dismantle all the courts, but he can do quite a lot, and this regime can do quite a lot.
Well, yeah, and early, you know, let's take a moment to note positive results from the election. The marijuana won in a rout. It's prevailed in several states, and now it's no longer the easy bust, which will primarily affect African Americans.
You were saying in our last segment that this often it's the entry drug to the criminal justice system because it's easy to bust people on that.
Exactly.
On marijuana.
And although consumption is equal across races, the arrests are four times more likely if you're African American. So that's a good thing. But what will happen at the national level, since marijuana is still illegal? You know, there was a memorandum written in 2013 by the Justice Department that basically told the states that we won't intervene. If you can do whatever you want, but the law remains on the books. It's possible for the federal government to reinstitute the illegality of marijuana and to challenge states and to actually arrest people. Now, I don't think that'll happen because there's so many votes in favor of it in so many places now, but that's a possibility. And there are other areas of discretion, whenever there's within the Attorney General's office, that are going to create problems. It will not be the kind of flashpoint I think that immigration law will be, because there are judges and there are prosecutors of defense, and there's a tremendous inertia within the criminal justice system. But Sessions is eager and alert. He's got friends, and he will be busy.
And has some allies among Democrats who've brought out his support for equalizing penalties for crack cocaine and powder cocaine. What do you think about that? That defense of it's as though one has to be thoroughly 100% a villain in order to be cast a villain. The bar seems pretty low in this case, but he apparently does have allies across the aisle, as they say.
Well, he has. In 1986, he was rejected by a Republican judicial committee for a position of a district court judge because of racist remarks he had made in the past. He's worked diligently to overcome that. He nominated Rosa Parks for a Congressional Medal. He makes gestures toward equality, but
and apparently he's quite gentlemanly in some ways in his manner, you know, and that can be very seductive, I guess, versus Trump.
Well, I think he's going to be a formidable enemy to the interests that people who listen to this radio show share. Precisely because he's I won't say he's seductive, but he doesn't foam at the mouth. You know, he talks reasonably, but he's very intent primarily on stopping all immigration, of characterizing people as illegal, as criminals.
And even the notion of what is criminal becomes itself a kind of political discourse that's up for grabs. How you define a criminal?
He's very aware of that, and he will define it very broadly, and it will punish great swaths of people who are not currently being threatened.
Yeah, like the old line, "We are all legal." I think we should embrace this. We are all illegal on a certain level. I'm going to embrace it and fight back. So this is Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker talking today about the appointment of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. And we've got our work cut out for us, right?
That's right.
I finally broke into the prison. I found my place